school. I go hard in the motherfucking paint, nigga. Leave you stanky, nigga.
Podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
Hello.
What it do? What it do?
Coming to you live from Berlin.
Okay. Let's not get excited. It's not that deep.
Very excited. Very excited. In the old hometown, chilling. Mm. Running these streets, laying down the law.
Is that what you do? Is
it? Basically. Mm-hmm. Basically.
So obviously, I'm sure our listeners are like, how long are they going to make us wait until they talk about it? We're going to talk about hashtag Me Too. Where do we begin, though? There's so many levels to it. But let's just start with the fact that Alyssa Milano, who I'm going to date myself, who like, I literally, when people say Alyssa Milano, I'm like, who's the boss? So she don't even look like that today. But that's the only thing like I can definitively say about her career. Alyssa Milano went on Twitter on Sunday and was like, she wrote a call out, right? She she asked followers to share their stories of sexual harassment and assault using the phrase Me Too. After, you know, she of course first talked about her own experience, and it's gone viral. I couldn't open any social media channel, it didn't matter if it was Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, without seeing my news feed flooded, or my timeline flooded with Me Too, with the hashtag.
It was everywhere.
It was everywhere. Women coming out and telling their stories. Now, obviously, this was sparked by the fact that, or this still ongoing unraveling of Harvey Weinstein and all of the women that he harassed and assaulted over the years. However, some Twitter users became loud, and they became loud quickly because it's not originally from Alyssa Milano. Interesting part is Alyssa didn't know that a Me Too campaign already exists, according to her. But after she was made aware of it, she did apologize and give credit where credit is due. She tweeted, quote, I was just made aware of an earlier hashtag Me Too movement, and the origin story is equal parts heartbreaking and inspiring. And then she also included the link to MeToo.support. So who actually started the movement? A Black woman. Her name is Tarana Burke, and she started it because of her own experiences of sexual and gendered violence. And she went on to tweet, and I'm going to quote her tweets, Me Too. It has been amazing watching all of the pushback against Harvey Weinstein and in support of his accusers over the last week. In particular, today I have watched women on social media disclose their stories using the hashtag Me Too. It made my heart swell to see women using this idea, one that we call empowerment through empathy. The point of the work we've done over the last decade with the Me Too movement is to let women, particularly young women of color, know that they are not alone. It's a movement. It's beyond a hashtag. It's the start of a larger conversation and a movement for radical community healing. Join us. End quote. Now, what's interesting about all of this is, I'm going to go again and date myself. Blossom felt the need to write an opinion piece on this campaign and said that...
Oh, yeah, that was Blossom. I know she looked familiar.
Yes.
Oh, cute little.
Yeah, that was Blossom. She comes out after all of this has happened, right? After people, Bevy Smith, Alicia Garza, Tarana Burke, all of them have talked about this campaign existing for the last 10 years. Blossom comes out and feels the need to say, you know, this is a hashtag. It's going to be forgotten tomorrow. This is not the answer. This is not the solution. Okay, Blossom. And then had to come out and apologize for her opinion piece, like the very next day, because she received so much critique for it. But my question is, so we have this great video on Mike.com from Tarana Burke explaining how she founded her movement. We have this article on Ebony that really gets into it. And this is a really important article because the article not only explains background as to why it was problematic that Tarana Burke was first written out of this story, they also go and explain why Black women and women of color were first, you know, hesitant to join the boycott Twitter movement, because white women do something and then white women respond but don't offer that same solidarity to Black women. There was no call to boycott Twitter after Less Dog, that's her handle, after the incredible abuse that she received. There was no call when, I don't know, there's Jamil so many.
Hill.
I'm sorry?
Jamil Hill also.
When Jamil Hill lost, you know, or was put on suspension for saying something really normal. And then the person who was suspended, Rose McGowan, for talking about her rape on Twitter, after her account was reactivated, you know, people got really upset, and understandably, because James Corden thought it was okay to make some jokes already about Harvey Weinstein at his opening. And he even told people, if you don't want to hear Harvey Weinstein jokes, you might
relax.
You need to just leave, because the rest of this monologue is going to be some Harvey Weinstein jokes. So Rose McGowan goes on Twitter and retweets this video of his making the jokes and then says, "This is rich, famous Hollywood white male privilege in action. Replace the word women with the N-word. How does it feel?" Now, someone must have peeped to her quickly. That's not where you want to go. But Rain of April immediately screenshot it and thankfully pinned it to the top of her Twitter profile so that we can all see it, the original. And she, when she tweeted this, she said, "So this happened. It's been deleted. Rose doesn't understand intersectionality or the particular struggles women of color face. Unfortunate." End quote. Like, not to mention that women is not a derogatory term universally and does not have a historical equivalent of the N-word. What do Black people have to do with James Corden making Harvey Weinstein jokes? So this is the woman, Rose McGowan, who got removed, or her Twitter account got deactivated. This is the woman that has these rape allegations out against Harvey Weinstein, that called all these other white women to want to boycott Twitter. This is the same woman. And now Alyssa Milano gives us this call, Me Too, because of this white woman. And this is how they do us.
Of course. Of course. I mean, this is how they always do us, right? If any movement wants to sort of quantify their oppression, they look at Black people, right? And I really want to be very specific with this, because sometimes we say women of color when we mean Black. This was not about women of color. This was about Black women, right? She didn't say darkie. She didn't say something that could be used against women of color. She said something that is exclusively used as a derogatory term for Black people. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't anti-people of color. This was anti-Black.
Correct.
Specifically.
Yes.
And she still doesn't understand why it was a problem, right? Like, she woke up the next day and was like, "Yeah, my bad, I was high." And somebody wrote, you know, the fact that you are, in the wake of your anti-Black tweet, are talking about your incarceration-free joint, right? Because we can't get high without going to jail, essentially, right? Like, we are so policed on American streets that, like, getting high, you know, is at your own risk. Like, you know, it's not something white people go to jail for, but it's something that we catch years behind a few joints. So she doesn't understand anything. But, you know, she's very, very loud and brazen. And I'm sure in some way, you know, she's like, "My intentions are all that matters." I mean, like, and then there's a lot of people that have her back that are just like, "Why can't we just suck it up and not do this now, because we have the potential to just kind of like fall in line and get behind some sort of like half-cocked idea of a boycott," right? Like, that isn't a boycott, right? Like, mm-hmm. It was so absolutely ridiculous on a lot of levels. The thing is that people become sometimes like politicized, mm-hmm. in a way that is extremely myopic, in a way that is really just about their own particular experience.
I mean, that's what she said, though. Rose McGowan specifically said this is her struggle, mm-hmm. and her experience.
So it doesn't mean that they get politicized around anything else. I mean, last week we were talking about these gay servitors, right? Mm-hmm. So these gay people, gay men, mostly in the Netherlands, that are really, really kind of standing firm in their whiteness and their xenophobia and their misogyny, and, you know, kind of doing Milo 2.0 stuff. Because the only politicization that they have, the only negation of the privilege that they have, is this whole gay business. Mm-hmm. So all they're trying to do is, like, let that be acceptable to the point where it benefits them, and then nothing else. And they're not politicizing anything else.
There's no transfer.
No, there's no transfer to any other, anything that doesn't affect them directly. So Rose is very, very firmly a white woman with a lot of white supremacist ideas, right? Mm-hmm. That she clearly expressed.
Yes, that she did. And I think it's amazing that people still claim that there would be an outrage over the N-word. And there's not. There's no outrage over the N-word. I mean, what's his name? Who we talked about on the show? He said, nah, I'd be a house N-word. Okay. There was no outrage. There was outrage from the small population of people of Black people who were a little bit woke. And that was it. Like, Ice Cube had to go on the show and school him on it. That was all that happened. There was no call to action.
Oh, Bill Maher. Bill Maher. Go. Yeah. Oh, he's a mess. He's a mess. Yeah.
There was no outrage about that. There was just, oh, you know, he's kind of like that. And it's not the first time he did it. So there
he's edgy. He's edgy.
He's edgy.
He's not a racist. He's making fun of racism.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the other thing that came up with the Me Too hashtag, just briefly. There were a lot of people, including women, who jumped in on this hashtag to be like, there's not only gendered violence against women. Men and boys also endure sexual assault. How do you feel about that?
But who made it gendered? I don't understand. This is like a straw man argument. It's kind of like, why are you including people that weren't excluded? I mean, Terry Crews didn't feel that he couldn't speak. He was inspired to speak up about his sexual assault when all these women started coming forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, I don't feel like it's been a demotivator for men to talk about their experience, seeing other victims of sexual assault talk about their experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but some feminists would say, this isn't your time. There's an entire article on it.
I don't think I don't feel like it was a gendered movement. There's nothing in what the founder said.
Well, the founder says that it was particularly that she, as I already read, that she did this particularly to bring awareness to sexual assault. And especially for young girls of color to recognize that they aren't alone in their experiences and in the empowerment of empathy.
Right. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's exclusive to young girls of color, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are all these white women that are using the hashtag too that I've seen.
Yes.
And there are a lot of non-binary trans folks and trans folks that are using the hashtag as well. I feel that...
But Tarana Burke specifically in her tweet that I already read said the point of the work we've done over the last decade with the Me Too movement is to let women, particularly young women of color, know that they are not alone. It's a movement. And I agree with her. I think men and women who feel the need while this is happening to say, well, men and boys get abused too. I think it's similar to Blue Lives Matter and All Lives Matter. I think it's a way of derailing the conversation because if you look at the numbers, according to the UN, 1 in 3 women experience violence in their lives. And the dark number, who knows how high that one is, of how many women experience sexual assault and just never come forward on it. I don't think those numbers are comparable for men and boys.
Right. But I'm fine. I also think it's ridiculous for someone to come on the hashtag and say, but what about all of the men? I also believe that. However, I feel that if an individual wanted to share their story with the hashtag and they were not identifying as women at the time, I don't know. I feel like, of course, I mean, like, it's about these firsthand stories.
Mm-hmm.
So who comes on and shares a firsthand story of assault? I think it actually, the idea is to see reflections of yourself and to see how widespread the issue is.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're interested and want to find out more about the movement and not simply the call to action on Twitter, you can go to metoo.support to learn more. In our second segment, there's just like a lot of things going on that I feel like it's just like, is this like what Blackness is today? I feel like there's so much on Black, obviously, right? Blackness is a spectrum if you want to talk about political Blackness. And there's so much going on, but it's going in different directions. So you're excited about, like, you know, this festival coming up in London that's going to be like next week. It's called
Black Girl Festival.
The Black Girl Festival. Yeah. And then we have, on the other hand, someone who you actually was really excited about with his veganism. Waka Flocka.
I mean, I feel my heart. You know?
Let me set it up. So Waka Flocka, who is or was, I don't know, I think he still lives, a rapper. And he's kind of like, he's kind of cool because, you know, he's a tall Black man. He has locks and he's really done a lot of work around the fact that he's now a vegan and he loves that. And he always talks about it. And he has some, I don't know about his new stuff, but some of his old stuff, he has some good bangers, right? Like, you can be in the club, hear Waka Flocka song come on, be like, what? That's my jam. But Waka is going through, like, an identity crisis and doesn't see it as such, and went on Sway's Universe to talk about how he checks the other box. He says he has no connection or education with African-Americans. He claimed that it's a system that's connected to the idea of, hey, he's a bad guy. And that's why that has nothing to do with him. He said a whole lot of stuff, but I just want to get into that. Like, how do we, on the one hand, have, in a place like London, a Black Girl Festival coming up when we already have things like Black Girls Rock? Don't get me wrong. Like, but this is like a community organized festival to celebrate Black girls and Black women, Black British women specifically, is what they say. So,
shame.
I don't know what you speak of. But on the other hand, we have someone who, because the thing is, if you go on Instagram today, you'll find there are a lot of people who are like, Black vegan, Black vegan, Black vegan. Like, it's a hashtag, right? Black veganism, Black vegan. So you want to be excited when someone like Waka Flocka, who comes from like the rap game, is talking about veganism. But then he goes to check the other box. Like, how is that? How do we get there? Is it a good thing that Blackness is allowed to be so expansive now? Or can we even consider what he does Blackness if he checks the other box?
You know, the one drop rule was created for a reason. And the reason was...
But Waka Flocka got a whole lot more than one drop.
He got a few drops, at least. At least three or four drops.
It might be the full cup of drops.
So for those of you that don't know, the one drop rule is...
There's nobody who doesn't know that.
There's nobody that doesn't know. What about our international?
Podcast. Not Stop listening it. Come to on. Our podcast. Come on.
Not everybody went to Howard University. Stop.
Oh, Lord. You got to plug every time. Go, Howard.
Is you? the one drop rule is a rule that essentially said, you know, you got one drop of black blood, you're Black.
Right.
And that is a rule that is an illustration of how whiteness is not... has anything to do with your percentage of DNA of white people or whatever in your ancestry. What it has to do with is that whiteness is a construct and it is a gated community. Just think of it as that. It's a gated community, right? You don't get to decide if you're in it or not, right? And in this way, you know, the way that race is lived is not necessarily one that we have control over, right? We are born into a body and unto parents and whatever, and society's rules tells us what our race is. We don't, you can want to define a race. I mean, I understand that notion. We want to define everything else about us, right? But generally, most people, especially those of us that are visibly Black, like Waka Flocka and myself, you look like my cousin. You look like my cousin. We don't get the luxury of, you know, trying to be flexible with it. So we could say we other all day long. If I go to the hospital, if Waka go to the hospital or gets pulled over by the police and that person, that nurse or that cop is filling out the form, Waka's still Black. Waka Black, Black, Black. He blackity Black, Black. The APB say Black man, right? Like, so that's what it is, right? And his entire career is based off of the anchor in Black culture that he has. The problem is that there are a lot of us that come from very Black places, Black neighborhoods, Black schools, Black everything. And just as soon as we open our mouth on a telephone, people could tell we're Black, right? All, you know, it's Black coming out our pores, but at the same time have very little education in what Blackness means. So we see ourselves like Waka sees himself in the sense of seeing Blackness through this lens of negativity, through this lens of white supremacy. And if you look at Blackness through the mainstream lens of negativity, then everything you know about Blackness, at least on an intellectual level, right, is negative, right? So Waka talks about that, about how his escape into the other is really just trying to escape the stigma that he sees associated with his Blackness. And he has a lot, you know, and goes on and trying to escape that is really doing some really embarrassing stuff around his own internalized anti-blackness. It's hard to watch.
I mean, but the thing is, right? So like he was trying to use like some philosophical or, you know, some mathematical he was trying to do some mathematical when if. And so while saying that he was completely ignorant, he was still trying to speak and basically said that if Columbus is Italian, he is Italian.
Okay.
But Columbus isn't who you descend from.
Right, right.
So I'm not really sure what the conquistadors' nationality is.
You know, because I'm an Austrian, most Black people that I deal with right now in my community, people I love, are mixed race. So they tend to have one white parent or one non-Black parent and one Black parent. Mm-hmm. And many of them love to say, I'm half white and I'm half Black. And I'm just like, you know, race don't do halves. You know, I mean, like, I understand you want that to happen, but race doesn't do halves.
That's not how race works. But that's just a complete non-understanding of this contrived notion of race. People mm-hmm. continue to use race as if it were a real thing. I mean, there's a recent article, like an article literally just came out that an academic article that says there's no such thing as race. It has like, it's gone through the numbers, it's done all the DNA, all of the science to say this race thing does not exist. And it's not the first article to do it, but we continue to have people use race as if it is a thing. It's not a scientific, biologically based thing. It is mm-hmm. something white people came up with, and it is very useful to this day. And I'm not saying we should discount the fact. I'm not saying it's not a thing. It's very much a thing on my daily life, right? When I walk down the street. But it's not a thing that affects us biologically. So people who have, parents of different origins need to get it together in their head that does not determine what their race is. But, you know, that's very hard. In Brazil, they have over 100 different words to describe their colorism.
Their colorism. You didn't say race. You said their colorism.
Because that's what it is. They got over 100 words. You can't just be Black. You got, like, the degree, right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like anti-Blackness is so very real in Latin America. What was that country that they wouldn't put Black on the census form because they didn't want to insult nobody?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to look that up and I'm going to get back to you. But yeah, it's real. Like, there are all these Black people running around in Latin America that are so unwilling to last breath to in any way admit their clear Blackness. You know, like, you look at them and you're just like, oh, you're just a Black person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I could get mistaken for people in Mexico and people don't understand that.
Right.
Because they, you know, the vision of Latin America, the vision of a place like Mexico is that Black people don't even exist.
But there are loads of them, right? There are loads of them. And like, it was just like my experience in Peru. Everyone kept calling me Colombian. And I was like, you have Afro-Peruvians. That's
right.
that's a thing. Like, you don't have to assume that I'm from Colombia because that's the place that you assume is the Black hub. But what do we do with people like Waka? Do we like, I mean, we don't want to disown them, but it seems it would be a lot of effort. He's so Black. But it seems like it would be a lot of effort to like school him. But you know, if Gucci Mane can lose all his weight and then wind up with a fine fly wife and then do like the next level wedding, maybe there is hope for someone like Waka.
Oh, he's got people, you know. I mean, I'm sure, you know, Andre 3000 will pull him aside. I'm sure T.I. will pull him aside.
Why would either one of them pull Waka aside? Just because they're from Atlanta?
Oh, what? So you're saying there's animosity?
I'm not saying there's animosity, but just because they all from Atlanta don't mean they all cool.
I'm sure they all go to a cookout together. I'm pretty sure that they
got involved. I don't know. Andre be real particular. I don't know if Andre be going through to all the cookouts.
Well, in my imagination, they got a playgroup for their kids and they got a golf course they all go to. And yeah, I'm sure, you know, he just runs in circles with people that are so rooted in Blackness and have a bit more, hopefully come from a place where they don't hate themselves so that they can like pull him aside and be like, yo, what is he doing for real? I mean, T.I., on the other hand, just went to support a protest out front of a restaurant in Atlanta that was refusing to seat Black people. And he was in front of the restaurant, like, yeah, protesting and supporting.
T.I. is very loud these days. I don't know. Ever since he broke up with his white Australian protege. No, they're back together. Him and Tiny are back together.
Tiny was at the protest as well. Yeah. So.
But ever since, you know, he cut ties, he's been real loud about things. But I mean, what kind of world are we living in if Waka Flocka Vegan, talking about he other, but P. Diddy, Chirac, and Master P are talking about buying the NFL or creating a new NFL because the NFL is still oppressing Black people?
Yeah, I don't really think that a Waka can exist for long in his current incarnation. I think that he's a really... What I noticed about some vegans that are vegans like Waka, who are just like, you know, veganism is life, and let me talk about it from the mountaintop,
mm-mm,
are usually people that are very outspoken, but that can be swayed in the sense of like when they don't have the education, they're still very outspoken. So this is where he's at now. He's very outspoken, doesn't have an education. When he gets politicized in the other direction, watch him write a book. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Meanwhile, there he is with his, you know, raising his Black child with his Black wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just being a beautiful
person. He's going to have a LeBron James moment when somebody come and write the N-word on his house?
He going to have that wake-up moment. He going to have one of them. Who was that dude, the Harvard professor who got stopped by the police? He's trying to go Henry Louis Gates. He going to have a Henry Louis Gates moment.
Or Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx had that moment too, where he was like, he remembered that he was Black when he got pulled over by the police. I was like, how did you ever forget?
Oh, stop. But let's just hope he don't have a Kanye moment. Somebody broke Kanye.
And in our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to? Come on, big spender, big baller. Rolling around in taxis in Berlin. How about you, lady on the line? Let's hear it. What you doing? What you excited about?
I'm excited about. Yes. Girl, you always put me on the spot first. You go first.
No,
no.
This is the order of things.
You know what?
It's not a new question. Just answer it.
This is exactly what fascism looks like. I'm excited about the exhibition Staying with Trouble that is coming to Vienna. And
who would that be? Staying with Trouble will be at the Weltmuseum in Vienna. And it is by Raj Kamal Kalon. She is an American artist based in Berlin, of South Asian descent. And be lit for sure.
Yes. So she works with the theme of ethnographic portrait photography. I'm really looking forward to it. The images that I've seen so far look very striking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go on a tour and I'm very excited.
Oh, you're going on a tour?
I'm a brand. Yes. We might have some coffee. It's going to be lit. It's going to be really dope. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. That's exciting.
Yes. So that's going to be the highlight of my week next week. Because
mm-hmm.
after I come from Berlin, I need to sleep for 3 days. Mm. We're going nonstop while I'm here. Mm. What are you excited about? What are you looking forward to?
So this is going to be like a very yoga filled weekend because the Om Yoga Show will be in London this weekend and I get a free ticket. That's the only reason I'm going. And so I'm looking forward to the Om Yoga Show and hopefully connecting and finding other people who would be interested in working with me on my project, Oya Body Mind Spirit Retreats. And on Sunday, I get to be in the company of beautiful Black and brown women who will be attending our urban retreat, Coming Home to Self. And it's a different type of retreat. So I've teamed up with a woman who is a sex ecological body worker. And we've done a 4-part series where we will be, how timely, in this first retreat discussing consent and boundaries and how to say yes and how to say no. And first of all, how to know where the yes and the no are for us and how these things may shift. So I feel like it's a really timely discussion. I'm really excited about it. We have new people attending. We have people who've attended other events attending. And I hope that I'll learn something really exciting at the very white middle class centric yoga show on the Saturday that I can transform to then integrate into my own work. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
That sounds kind of lit. I'm sure, you know, y'all going to have like some artisanal water there. It's going to be some crystals. It's going to be lit. You might get your chakras aligned. That's going to be nice.
Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you have time and a dime, check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/The Queer Truth. Until next time, peace out.